The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Good Thursday. Thanks for being with us. We have a jam-packed show today with pro football stuff. This book by Michael Lombardi, Football Done Right, has been a real fun read. Goose Gosling is tied in with him. We've had Rick on the show before. This is one of those books where he ranks players. Like Larry Fitzgerald is one of his top 100 players, but you would be surprised where he ranked Larry Fitzgerald. I will get into that with Michael Lombardi. Michael Lombardi was part of three Super Bowl championships and worked with Bill Walsh, Al Davis, and Bill Belichick. So this guy's seen a lot of football from the front office executive view, and his book is terrific. I also want to talk to him about the Cardinals. I want to talk to him about your Cardinals and the direction that they're going with the new coach, the general manager, and the quarterback, the idea of tanking. Also, what is going on with NIL now that Shedeur Sanders is now getting north of $5 million in NIL, and Caleb Williams' dad's like, well, maybe he just needs to stay in college. So we're going to get into all of that with Michael Lombardi. That comes up at 10:20. And then Lee Steinberg's going to be with us, Patrick Mahomes' agent. And I've had Lee on the show for over 35 years. I've been doing things with Lee. Used to be when I was on in LA and San Diego on Mighty 690 back in the day when we were the pioneers of all sports radio. Lee would call in and say, yeah, I've got Troy Aikman here with me in the car, this quarterback at UCLA who transferred over. You want to talk to him, Brad? Sure. He hadn't signed him yet. He was getting close to. Yeah, I got Drew Bledsoe. I've got first quarterback that Lee Steinberg signed was a guy named Steve Bartkowski. So how does he put a deal together for Patrick Mahomes? This is going to be a business of sports conversation with Lee. I think it's going to be newsy too, because Lee is opening or attempting to open something here in the Valley that I think is pretty dramatic that I've been informed about. I want to talk to Lee about it and if he's able to execute it. Think IMG Academy, except it'd be here in Arizona. So that is coming up at 10:35. Man, that was a good tease. Whew. That was a good Iron Man. That was probably one of the best teases I think I've ever done. It was good. So Michael Lombardi and then Lee Steinberg. And we'll go deep on a whole bunch of things with both of them. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business, as always and through the years. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We do appreciate their ongoing support. Jeff Meshi and company are terrific over there. The Diamondbacks are the story in town. They are. Yeah, the Cowboys are coming here, but most of the people coming to the Cowboy game are flying in from other parts of the country. The Cowboys play the Cardinals on Sunday. More on that in a minute, a business conversation I had that gives you an idea of why this is such a big deal. So the Diamondbacks, like, I think they're going to make it, don't you? They're a game and a half up in the second wild card spot. They go to New York tomorrow. They fly there today. They are not throwing Zach Gallen until maybe Sunday against the Yankees. Like Brandon Pfaadt, this is what we talked about back in July when they called up Pfaadt. It was, you don't want to be in a position where it's late in the year and you're in nut cutting time, as I like to say, and you've got a huge game and you've got to put all your trust into Tommy Henry, who is hurt now, but it was pretty good. You got to put all your trust into Brandon Pfaadt. You got to put all your trust into Zach Davies. But that's where we are. That's where we are with just over a week to go in the season. Yankees, White Sox, Astros. Up a game and a half on the third wild card spot. And the Yankees stink. The White Sox stink. So, you know, you look at it, you're like, man, if they go 500, you know, if they crap the bet at this point, that's on them. But here it is with these, and then you've got to get wins out of Merrill Kelly and Zach Gallen when they throw. See, I look at it like if Zach Gallen stays on his schedule, so he would pitch maybe Sunday. Torrey didn't say after yesterday's game, but he probably pitch Sunday. So then he would probably pitch Friday against Houston. Well, do you want Zach Gallen on the hill to open up when you're in the postseason? Yes. So if you can get things handled before it's Houston, and you can set up your rotation, even if it's Zach Allen for an inning, for him just to go out and get his work in because you know you're in the postseason. And the same with Merrill Kelly. You do not want to have Brandon Pfaadt open up. You don't. It's not, I don't like him. I think he's great as a kid, though, and his record's deceiving. He's pitched better lately. But just think about that. If you're Torrey Lovello and how you want things to work out, if you take care of business against the Yankees and White Sox, you have a whole lot of options so that your postseason run, you have all your bullets in the chamber. If you've got to sit there and it comes down to just winning a game on Friday, Saturday, or you know, God forbid, the last day of the season, and you've got to burn up everybody, that's not what you want to be in. That's not where you want to be. So it's fun to be in this spot. It is. I don't root much, but I am rooting. I'm rooting. The hometown baseball team is good. It's a long grind. I love Major League Baseball. It's a true measurement. We don't hear about load management. Yeah, there's pitch counts. It's different, though. They're still out there every fifth day. This isn't like the NBA trying to fake their way through the regular season or the NFL where it's dog food in most of September because August is fake. Nope, this is the real deal. And I admire the hell out of these guys for being there at this point. I'm rooting for them. It's cool that we're going to have a rookie of the year here in the Valley. That's right. I said we. It's cool. I think Corbin Carroll is as good a story. I remember a couple of years ago, I was down in the field at a game, and Derek's down there. I said, so who's the player that nobody's talking about that we should be talking about? And this is when they were getting their heads kicked in. This is when things were really bad. And he's like, well, it's just Corbin Carroll. It's going to be Corbin Carroll. It's going to be Corbin Carroll. And here we are with Corbin Carroll. 25 home runs, 50 stolen bases, first rookie in Major League Baseball history to do it, and he's here for us to see. That's cool. That's really cool. So off day today at the Yankees tomorrow night. Michael Lombardi right around the corner on his new book, Football Done Right, and then Lee Steinberg on today's show. The Thursday night game, actually get to see Brock Purdy do his thing tonight. I was texting with his dad yesterday. So Brock's cleats have been sent to Canton to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And just kind of continues on this whole, it makes no sense if you go through everything with his story. It just doesn't, other than he's going out kicking ass and taking names with the 49ers. And how can you not root for him? He was like 2 miles from us, seeing him as a dumpy kid over at Perry High School, right around the corner from where I'm at. And he plays tonight against the Giants. It'll be fun. It'll be a great time. ASU, USC, so there's a bunch of different angles around this. I'm not going to be a smart ass about introducing ASU fans before the players, or that it'll be a USC convention and all that, because most of that's true. I feel bad for Kenny Dillingham. I've said that throughout this week. But I think what Kenny said about this being like Florida State, it was a pretty good comparison, other than he didn't have the NCAA still hanging around, still haven't closed the book, still haven't said, yeah, our investigation is done. We're moving on. They haven't done that here yet. So anybody can tell me, well, yeah, just you make too big a deal. No, I'm not going to make a too big deal about it until they're done. That's just fact. And I think what Kenny is saying is, you know, look at where Florida State is now. Like Florida State's favorite against Clemson this weekend. When was the last time that happened? It's a great weekend of college football. It really is. You look at all the big games, like Ohio State's playing Notre Dame, and Notre Dame's going to pull out those Kelly Green puke jerseys of theirs. And, you know, Ohio State's been up and down. Ohio State, it doesn't matter what they do against Notre Dame. It doesn't. If they lose again, or if Michigan is able to get over on Ohio State again, that's the game that matters. There's just a bunch of good games. I'm looking forward to watching Arizona-Stanford if I can find it on the almighty Pac-12 Network. I don't know if you saw my timeline last week. Pac-12 Network, it's so bad. It's like low-grade high school streams on Friday nights. They had a U of A game. It was U of A and UTEP, and they were using the ASU graphics. So, like, it shows it was a play where, oh my gosh, I can't even begin to imagine. This is a network, right? This is a network. It's not like misspelling a name, which happens unfortunately in the business, but even at the highest level, that shouldn't happen. If you're a network and it's, anybody notice that we're using ASU's graphics here with a U of A game? It's got the little pointing the arrow, third down and six with a Sun Devil pitchfork. And it's just, oh my gosh, you can't script how bad it is. Nice people that I'm sure that work there behind the scenes, but they're just crawling to the finish line. Oregon State plays Washington State, the big two. I saw where somebody suggested this morning that both fan bases should rush the field after the game is over, just to send a message like, you know what, we belong here. We belong. I like that. In terms of the, you know, the back on the ASU thing, it's Kenny's going to get his head kicked in. His coaches have to hang in there. His coaches have to stay together. Kenny's going to call some plays, which is interesting with Bo Baldwin here. There's a lot being made out of that. He doesn't have his first string quarterback. He may not have his second or third string quarterback by the time the day is over. USC is going to throw all of these former Arizona high school stars out there on the field. And of course, we have to point out that they were Arizona high school stars who, oh, by the way, didn't go to ASU. It's not being vindictive. It's just, here they are. Here they are, all of them. Or Eric Gentry, who went in the transfer portal because he wanted to go to USC and not stay at ASU. I don't care how much money he got paid or didn't get paid. I don't care how the deal went down. Dorian Singer leaving U of A and going over to USC because Caleb Williams went to his coaching staff and said, we need to go get that guy. Deuce Robinson. Kenny got here late, tried to get in on Deuce Robinson. It was way too late because the former staff was so inept and so incompetent. It just didn't happen. And there's many other names, Jacoby Lane and others. So that's that. If you missed Bleacher Talk with Claudia and Spurge on our high school platform, check that out with Bruce Cooper because they have good high school stuff. And, of course, the Cardinals and the Cowboys on Sunday. Up next, it is Michael Lombardi, Football Done Right. I am Brad Sussmat. All right, as promised, I've been telling you I've been reading this book that Michael Lombardi put out and that I was going to have Michael on the show. I wanted to give the NFL season a couple of weeks. This has been as good a read. Lists produce debate, but they also produce knowledge and history. When you have a three-time Super Bowl winning executive that says, I'm going to put things down. And we've had Rick Gosselin on the show through the years many, 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 many times. And Goose was an advisor on this, some of this content. I wanted to have Michael on to talk about Football Done Right. I will tell you now, this is one of those books here in late September that you should just get now, stick it under the tree for Dad. I'm just selling Christmas presents here, Michael.
So. Thank you, Brad. And Rick was a huge help. I owe a debt of gratitude. I've known Rick. I met Rick in 1987 at Mike Godfrey's house on the campus of the University of Pittsburgh. And we've been friends ever since. And he was a tremendous help for me in terms of editorial help and also in terms of content help. So I needed that voice, particularly somebody that has been in the room having these discussions with the other writers.
What made you decide to do this book? What did you want to accomplish from it? Why now?
Well, a couple of things. I wanted to make people aware of some that have been overlooked, right? Buddy Parker, who finally is getting looked. I thought that was an injustice. Marty Schottenheimer, 200 career wins. He can't get a sniff. You know, everybody thinks it's easy to win regular season games. It's not. So I wanted that. Also, I wanted to try to explain the game through my eyes. I wanted to kind of highlight what influenced me to love this game so much. And that's why the chapter on television was important, because without Howard Cosell, without Brent Musburger, and those things combining together, Monday Night Football, the NFL Today, my passion may not have grown that much. So I wanted it through my eyes, and then I wanted to write about some of the players that I think belong in different categories. I think Dion was right, and I started writing this book before Dion said it. The Hall needs wings. Not every jacket's the same jacket. This book was not intended to take anybody out of the Hall of Fame other than George Preston Marshall. It was intended to make people aware of some guys that are being overlooked, like Sterling Sharp or the great Kenny Washington, who couldn't play because of the because of the racial inequity that went on in the league during the 30s and 40s.
When I picked up the book, I immediately went to, where did he put Fitz? Because here in Arizona, I've seen Larry Fitzgerald, and Larry had a lot of quarterbacks that couldn't hit the broadside of a barn and still put up big numbers. And, you know, for the common fan that will say, who was Don Hutson and why is he 10? And Larry Fitzgerald is in the 80s. So I'll just take that one. And look, here's the thing. When I do book interviews, I don't want to give away the whole book because then nobody buys it. So I'm using that as an example. And I've got one other one that I'll get to, but Fitz and receivers, and how do you break that out?
And I start that off by really, that's the hardest position on any draft board. So I viewed this as a draft board. And I started with 150 names and I had to whittle it down to 100. And then I had to put them in categories. And I also had to understand the era, you know, because some guys' stats look really good and they were getting the ball. Par Warfield's stats don't look as good, but when you realize he was scoring a touchdown every five catches, wow, you're like, oh my God, this guy's incredible. Same thing with Lenny Moore. So look, I'm a Valley Forge Military Academy graduate. So is Larry. He's got a fondness. I have a special place in my heart, but Hutson was one of those tilt the field players. Not that Larry wasn't. Again, if you're in the top 100, you're a unique player, right? But Hutson was this incredible talent who could fly and could make acrobatic catches when the ball looked like a volleyball, you know, and it wasn't the same football that we're catching now. And so, and the fact that the story of him signing, you know, he signed a contract with two teams, the Packers and the Giants. And the reason he became a Packer was because it was postmarked earlier from Green Bay than it was New York. So there's a great story behind that. And all the stuff that went on in the league in the 30s and 40s was compelling to me. But look, all these guys are great. We're talking about splitting hairs here.
The name of the book is Football Done Right. Michael Lombardi with us. You can find Michael on his social at M Lombardi. He also is on VSiN. We've done stuff with VSiN in the past with Brent Musburger and Todd Musburger.
Tremendous.
Yeah, great people from day one. Jimmy Vaccaro has been a regular of mine for 30 plus years. So you're with really good people there. Bill Walsh, Al Davis, Bill Belichick, you worked with all of them in the Super Bowl runs. Did each one of them have a voice inside your head as you were writing on this book?
Oh, yeah. Well, let's start with Walsh. I mean, well, you know how you're no matter how old you are, your parents or the people that influenced you the most as a child, their voice rings in your ear every day, even though they may not be with you. You know, certainly my mother, I hear her voice, but I also hear Coach Walsh's voice every day. Something that happened, something that went on. Justin Fields' press conference yesterday triggered a Bill Walsh thing. There's always something that Walsh is in my ear. So every page has Walsh. Every page has Belichick. And Al Davis, you know, you could not help but have him be such a dominant force in your life because he teaches football unlike football anybody else knows. And he knew it. And it was a hard place to work, but it was also a very rewarding place in terms of your knowledge.
What do you think it's like in the Patriot offices right now with their start under Belichick? You've worked with him. What do you think it's like?
I think here's where he and Walsh are very similar. They understand the main thing and how to keep the main thing the main thing. And what he'll do a really good job of is figuring out why he won and why he's lost. And he'll try and he'll work specifically on those areas. And I'm pretty confident that he'll work on the area of when he crosses midfield to get to the end zone, which is where they've had too many negative plays. They've had too many mistakes. And he'll focus his attention on fixing that problem because that is the main problem. That's what makes those guys so good. They don't just look. They find the reasons why they win and why they lose. When I used to get on the team playing with Al Davis, he would call me over and say, do you know why we won or do you know why we lost today? And I would have to give him the answer. And it couldn't be, well, we didn't run the ball, Mr. Davis. You know, no, that wasn't going to cut it, right? You had to give him a specific answer. And so it's the same thing with Belichick. And that's what they'll practice this week. Forget the Jets. Forget the Cowboys a week from now. We got to practice on the stuff that we're beating ourselves. Mm-hmm. We're beating ourselves. And if we don't stop beating ourselves, we're not going to beat anybody. Doesn't matter who the opponent is. So that's what's going on inside that building right now.
Before I get you out of here, and again, make sure you pick up the book. Michael Lombardi with us. You can find him over on VSiN and on social media. The book is out, Football Done Right. Michael, the view of what's going on here in Arizona, I came over here from San Diego. I worked with the Chargers, and Bobby Bethard poured into me as a host over there, and Billy Devaney and that whole group. And I come here to Arizona, yeah, and people are saying, you know, the Cardinals, they're really not our team, and they have a little bit of success. And we've seen the same old thing through the years. And now the fan base, what's left of it, like this Sunday when the Cowboys are here, it's going to be a Cowboy convention. And it's usually a Cowboy convention in a lot of places, but here it's really going to be a Cowboy convention. Just curious from your view, they have their one and they have the Texans one. The whole idea of just tank this season away, can you do that and do it well? Is there an art? Is it like, Brad, that's just talk radio stuff. That can't happen. Or you may say, you know what? I kind of like what I myself like what Monty's trying to do here. Trade back, trade back, trade back. That's Bobby Bethard style back in the day. What do you see out of Arizona? Long-winded question, but what do you see going on down here and the fact they do have those two assets?
What I see is a team that two guys walked into a building and recognized they had a culture problem. They recognized their culture wasn't very good. And it starts with their quarterback, who's just chose to stay on the sidelines while the best player and the player the team gravitates to the most, Buda Baker, was on the field laying injured. So that they understand what the main problem is, you know, and they play hard. They try to play as well as they can. They're not overly talented. They're paying the sins of the past poor drafts, of the past not having an identity. But I don't think they're intentionally trying to tank. I just don't think they're good enough. They play well for 50 minutes. Or they're in a game for 50 minutes. They just don't have enough to get over. The fourth quarter determines most every single game. And they can't win a fourth quarter because they can't throw it when they have to throw it. They can't run it when they have to run it. They can't stop the run or stop the pass when they have to. That's the fourth quarter. And so I think they're trying. And I think what they're trying to do is get their culture right. And I can hear Murray trying to change his tune. I can hear him trying to become something that he has never been in his collegiate or pro career. And I think that 79 or 92 million and 58 million that awaits him out there, assuming that they can pass him on a physical and not guarantee his contract, is making him want to make sure he changes. So that's what's going on. They're going to be in every game. They'll be in the Cowboy game until the 50-minute mark, and then something will happen. They'll take it over. It's going to be – they're going to need a few breaks in the fourth quarter to win a game. They could have got one last week, a tip ball here or something like that. But they will play hard every week.
Is it irreversible with Kyler Murray? You brought it up. And the question here from fans and looking at it is, this guy, this is who he is. Can a player change that much, this stage of his career?
I don't know if he can. I mean, we want to believe most people can change. But I think here's the fundamental question you've got to answer. How good is he? We know what the media thinks of him, but how good is he? And how does he relate to these players that are coming out? You know, how good if I pass up Caleb Williams or Drake May or Michael Penix Jr. or any, Sam Hartman, whatever one, how does he compare? That's the fundamental question you have to answer. And if you answer that it's similar to those players, then you've got to make sure he changes. If you answer that he's not near the level of those players, they're better than him, then it doesn't matter the character. You got to make a move.
Last question, I'll get you out of here. I appreciate your time. And that is, Shadeer Sanders, Deion putting out that he has NIL north of $5 million. Caleb Williams' dad intimating that, you know, we might want to stay another year at USC. Yeah. We entering a new era now, Michael, where a player can say, you know, I really don't want to go to that place and get my head in, and I'll just make NIL and I'll stay in college. And what do you think of that whole era?
I think the few guys that can make that kind of money in NIL is few and far between. I mean, I think it's unique in Colorado, obviously Los Angeles. But I would say this, you know, back in the day, you know, John Elway had a threat to go to baseball with the Yankees to get away from Baltimore. I mean, he had to pull that trick. Bo Jackson did the same thing. So, you know, that's gone now. But NIL's real. And, you know, I think guys should stay in college longer. I think guys that leave college too early hurt themselves. You know, even Anthony Richardson or any of these guys that left early. The more reps you get, the better off you're going to be. So I look at it as a double-edged sword. Look, if you can't sell your – Joe Burrow had no problem going to Cincinnati, and Cincinnati wasn't a very good program when he went there. But Joe Burrow knew he would change the culture. And I think if you're Monty or you're Jonathan Gannon, you've got to go and you have the first pick and you want Caleb Williams, you got to convince the kid that, hey, look, you know, let's be honest here. We're changing the culture and you're going to be a part of it. because the money's going to be so greater than it is in college.
Right.
And why not build something around yourself?
Right. The NIL side of it is so short-sighted on some kids' parts. Just, you know, a few million, and the bigger dollars are out there. Look, I really appreciate your time. Again, the name of the book is Football Done Right with Michael Lombardi. Make sure you follow him on social media and listen to him, watch him on VSiN. Michael Lombardi with us. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
We're back with more after this timeout. It's always fun when you look across the Zoom and you see a familiar face that you've known for over 35 years. And that is the case here with noted sports attorney Lee Steinberg. Back in the day, Lee would be in his car and I'd be on the radio and I'd get a phone call and it would be Troy Aikman or it'd be Drew Bledsoe or it would be whoever Lee was signing as a Warren Moon. And all these years later, we still chop it up from time to time when there's a ton of stuff going on. There's so much going on in sports. And Lee is actually part of a project that I believe is going to get off the ground here in the Valley out at Legacy Sports Park. I'll let him talk about it a little bit. It's one of many reasons why I wanted to have him on the show. I'll give the floor to noted sports attorney. I'm not going to introduce you as an agent because you're more than that. And we're not going to talk about Patrick Mahomes' new deal because that's his deal. I just want to have you on the air to chop it up. It's good to see you, Lee.
All right. Thank you, Brad. I've appreciated our long friendship and watched with admiration your career in broadcast. So the concept of the school is that contemporary education does not seem to be working very well. There's a lack of basics, which is reading, writing, math, but there's also a need for specialty high schools. And we have a site in Mesa where it would be a high school. And if you were an athlete, you would get special education and training there. Mm-hmm. But additionally, if you were not someone with aspirations to that, but you wanted to work for a team, a league, a conference, an athletic director, sports marketing, branding, charity, any of those fields, you could get an enhanced education. And we think the Valley is a really promising site for that. And there's been a lot of interest. So stay tuned.
Steinberg Sports Academy, if it comes all the way to the finish line, would be out at Legacy Sports Park, formerly known as Bell Bank Park. And it's terrific. When I heard about this and Lee, I just had to get him on the show. This is like an IMG Academy, except supersized, it sounds like to me, right?
Yes.
Okay. Let's move over to some topics. So the Cardinals are taking on, and I'll get over to USC in a minute because they're tied together. The Cardinals are taking on Dallas this week. Lee, over here, there's a conversation of just tank this year. Kyler's hurt. The Cardinals have their own first. They have the Texans first. They could rebuild. They could go draft Caleb Williams. We're not going to get specific about him, but just go after a player of that caliber. Caleb Williams could stay in school at USC. Shedeur Sanders could stay in school at Colorado. Bronny James could stay at school at USC in his sport. So we're in this space now, Lee, that I think from your perspective, I'd be curious, did we ever get to a point where it may be better for a player to say, you know, I'm making a lot of NIL. I think I'm just going to stay here because I don't want to go to Arizona or I don't want to go to said team.
So the draft was not handed down by God to Moses on Mount Sinai. You know, it's not part of the Magna Carta or the Constitution of the United States. It's a control mechanism. So if you think about it, when Brad Sesmet comes off a college campus, you can use your own value system, which might be money or geographical location or family considerations or being on a winning team or the quality of coaching or starting. You could use those values to determine where you wanted to work. But the draft, while it's a big honor to be drafted, takes that away. It's just a control mechanism with the underpinnings of creating parity, but it can't really do that well when it's only one higher pick than other teams. So you can understand a young man saying, well, I've got this skill set and there would be multiple bidders out there. And so sometimes people are frustrated with the system. That being said, if you're the Arizona Cardinals, your perspective is this is opportunity. You got one, probably the fourth or fifth biggest city in the United States, a place where people are flocking. You've got endless business opportunity here. You've got people starved for winter. When, you know, I had Jake Plummer back in the Arizona State years, and then I had him with the Cardinals, and I saw what happened when they beat Dallas one year, tore down the goalposts. So you could make a powerful sale before that ever happened. And but that's all assuming that Arizona gets the first pick, which we're just in the second, you know,
third week
yeah. of the season. So but I understand the desire of a player to play where he wants. Normally you don't see this played out, Brad, because normally it's all conveyed behind the scenes and there are discussions, but it never hits it. Occasionally where Eli Manning got drafted by the Chargers for all of like an hour, and it breaks out. But I'm sure that they'll find a great solution.
Is NIL a game changer on this, though, Lee? I think
NIL is the, what has happened in college sports is the most dramatic series of integrated events to ever change the fabric of college sports. Mm-hmm. NIL means that campuses with big collectives, that is business people who are interested in their Sun Devil athletics, can band together and use their businesses to provide cash to a player coming to the school with recruiting, a player contemplating his future in a transfer portal. And what's going to happen is it's going to devolve into the 40 schools in the country that have this, mm-hmm. and the rest of them that don't. And the big schools will be able to do big TV contracts and have revenue sports support all the underlying ones. But if you look at the precipitous breakup of the Pac-12 and the fact that what's happened in this geographical reshuffling is traditional rivalries are discounted. Geography and proximity is discounted. I mean, my alma mater, Cal, is rumored to be joining the ACC. Yeah. Now, this is the Pacific Ocean here. That's the Atlantic Ocean. You can't get farther away in the country than that. So all of these changes are occurring. And to your question, yes, if all of a sudden somebody like Caleb Williams is making $3 million a year and does it for 3 years and has $10 million in the bank, he's obviously not in the position a traditional draftee is, where if they don't take the team's offer, the big question for that athlete is, can he provide his date the extra toppings on the frozen yogurt? I mean, that's his big economic decision because he has no money. But in this case, it alters the balance.
Yeah, I was reading reports daily out of Boulder that Shedeur Sanders' NIL is now north of $5.5 million. And you know, you look at that and you say, why would a kid who's he's a talented kid, why would you say, you know what, I'm going to go over here, I'm going to stay in school for another year? You don't know, though, if a year from now it's the same deal. You don't get your NFL clock ticking. It was initially viewed as NIL is really small. You guys don't need to mess with NIL. I heard that argument. You just need to get the big money going in the NFL. Well, when you're $5.5 million and you're just now coming, what, as you said, we're in week 3 or 4 on the college season, that number can keep growing for him. Who knows where it's going to go for kids? I think it's a game changer, Lee, for a guy looking at the NFL. It's just a different option that we just haven't seen in all of our lives.
That's exactly right. And the only time players had any leverage was when there was a USFL or a World Football League or another real competitor. Other than that, they haven't had it at all.
Noted sports attorney Lee Steinberg with us for a couple of minutes. Okay, USC, the turnaround of USC. It's the last time that they're coming here to play Arizona State this week. There's a ton of Valley kids that are over at SC. What is it about the Trojan athletic department? You're right there in the middle of it all. Is it all just Lincoln Riley? How did they get it figured out finally, Lee?
Well, first of all, remember that there are 17 million people within a couple hours driving distance of where I'm seeing. So they have a massive recruiting base. And for a number of years, those players were going to Arizona, Arizona State, Oregon, Oregon State, Washington, Washington State. They were losing all those players. Now they're keeping them. For many years, they had a tradition that a Marcus Allen would sit for a couple of years. He couldn't be a starter, but 1 year at SC was enough to get him into the pros. They're getting that going back again. They've returned the prestige to the system, and they are loaded. That little wide receiver, oh my God, yeah. Number one, you'll be seeing him all afternoon. And you have Caleb Williams, who and the next NFL draft is probably Caleb Williams and everybody else. And he's that good. So I think it's sad that that's the last time for SC and Arizona State. I mean, they've been playing each other for years, but this conference realignment is doing that. SC football has always been center stage. You referenced Sanders a second ago. In one fell swoop, every time I turned on talk radio yesterday, all they were talking about was Deion Sanders in Colorado. Deion Sanders, Deion Sanders. And SC now has returned. They're marketable. Their games are on TV. They're multiply presented. So all the young people growing up can see it. And then the most impactful person in all of the sports tableau is a college football coach. And so he can make more difference because he's got more responsibility. He has to project young players and how they'll be 4 years from now. He has to recruit them. He has to coach a big number. He has to deal with their emotional issues and everything else. He has to deal with alums. He has to deal with the press. And someone who gets all of that right, you forget drafting players. You should be drafting general managers, athletic directors, and coaches, because they're the ones who have the biggest impact. So, yes, the Lincoln Riley factor has been enormous.
What you just said there, there's Arizona State fans that are nodding their head because they're not happy with the athletic director over here in any way, shape, or form. And Arizona State, as long as I've been here, Lee, I came over, as you know, I came over in the early 90s. I heard the term sleeping giant, and they've been sleeping for many of those years, even with the late, great Bruce Snyder over here, and Jake's teams and all of that, and Juan Roque and the late Pat Tillman. So I think it's well put. Before I get you out of here, a couple other things, let me run by you. I remember you and I talked in 1995. There's a kid named Kajana Carter. And Kajana Carter stepped and his knee went pop, and all he did was step on a piece of turf that had a bad slit in it, and you weren't happy about it. Kajana Carter was never really the same, in my opinion, as what he could have been. And now here we are with Aaron Rodgers grabbing his Achilles. I knew when you and I were going to talk, it's like, hey, bring up Kajana Carter. And it's an old topic, but it's a present day topic of grass versus turf. What's your view of what's gone on here in the last week and this whole thing about let's just pull up the turf and we'll put down grass? Nobody's talking about the cost of it. Nobody's talking about the other events in the stadiums. What do you view? What's your view of it?
Football was meant to be played on grass, not artificial turf. And the game is already dangerous enough. There are already a multiplicity of injuries every single week. We don't need that being a factor. Now, grass is harder to maintain. It rains, it snows, the turf gets dug up, so it takes more time, it costs more money, and all the rest of that. But what's the consequence of losing Aaron Rodgers for the New York Jets? What amount of money would you trade back to have him and have natural grass that gives? What Kajana Carter said was he wasn't hit by anybody, Brad.
Right.
He said, my foot stuck in the turf. And that ended the career, the very first draft pick. He came back, but you're right, he wasn't the same. So the point is, look at the level of injury and risk that already exists. And now what happens is, if you lose a starting player, because of the cap system in pro football, his backup is not someone just a little bit worse. It's someone who's precipitously worse, maybe an unsigned free agent. And you don't have the money nor the cap room to replace that player. So the consequence of a serious injury has multiple ways in which it impacts the franchise and the rest of it. Whatever the cost is of converting the stadium, and understanding they do other events and the rest of it, but whatever the cost is de minimis compared to the tragedy of players getting injured in a way that could have been preventable.
Now, to your point about the quarterback position, we're seeing it over here with Kyler Murray. You know, Kyler Murray's not out there, and it's nothing against Joshua Dobbs, but that's where they are with the injury to their star player.
And in contemporary football, it's all about franchise quarterbacks. And Kyler Murray was on his way to becoming one. But the point is that without that key player that you build around for 10 to 12 years, that you win because of rather than with, and who in challenges and adversity, throwing a couple interceptions, the crowd is booing, the game's getting out of hand, what does he do now? Can he compartmentalize, adopt a quiet mind, and elevate his level of play in critical circumstances to take a team through? If a franchise doesn't have that player, good luck getting to the playoffs very far or winning a Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's well put. Last question, I'll get you out of here. And this is more of a, can you walk a fan? Because I will get this when I've had you on. And I know we're not being specific about Patrick and his deal. That's, you wanted him to comment on that. But is it a phone call you make to a team and say, what are we doing here? Let's tear this one up. Is it a team calling you saying, hey, is it just like, okay, guys, let's just get together and put it. How do you make the deal happen, Lee? And I don't want to take too much of your time on it, but that's the last thing, because I know people love the art of the deal. And with Mahomes getting his new one, how does something like that start?
So Patrick can speak for himself on the impact of his contract.
Right.
Speaking in general, what happens is that the one position a team does not want to have any lack of stability. It wants complete security. It wants to reassure everyone. It wants to have the person you build around. So you want to keep extending that contract. And if it becomes outmoded, there's a cap advantage to a team in taking a big salary and converting it to signing bonus. Mm-hmm. Signing bonus counts in an amortized way against the cap. All salary counts. So if you're trying to drop a cap number, you can pay another big bonus, amortize it over time, and then they get more room. The right way to do any veteran contract is quietly and behind the scenes. Right. Not let it break out into a situation where the player's protesting, the bad feelings come about, all of a sudden you get players saying, I don't want to be traded, and Lamar Jackson saying, I don't want it here. Nothing was wrong with the relationship between Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens ever, except for the fact that the contract couldn't get signed. So you want to do it quietly. You'd like it to be the team's initiative, but would I place a phone call to a team about a player that I think should get a new contract? Absolutely, I would. And again, but what you're trying to achieve is a general manager, a coach, and a player sitting at a table, the first words ever talked about on the contract, and everyone with big smiles.
That's good. That's good. I'll let you go off that. And good luck on Steinberg Sports Academy. I think it would be cool out here if it gets across the finish line. It's good to see you, Lee. Continued health. Thanks.
One last thing is, sure, that we do an agent academy for anybody interested in being in this field, and we teach you how to recruit, how to negotiate, how to set up a charitable foundation, how to brand and market. And go to Steinberg Sports Steinberg Speaks, steinbergspeaks.com, and you can see about our next one.
That is Lee Steinberg. It is great to catch up with him. As always, noted sports attorney, and we appreciate his time. We're back with more after this timeout.